From the halls of every school in Michigan, this is School Talks on 760 WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy. Sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran, Real Point, Collins and Blaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, and by Clark Construction. Now take your seats. Class is in session. Here's Robert.
This week on the program, we're joined by a panel of experts discussing literacy and just how children acquire language and learn how to read. From Richmond Schools, Will Lee Elementary, Principal Heidi Manguni, and teacher Elena Hunter. From Owosso Schools, we have Superintendent Steve Brooks, Assistant Superintendent Kathy Dwyer, and Middle School Principal Richie Collins. From Troy Schools, we have Teacher Consultant Kara Kucharik. And rounding out the program, we're going to take a look at the Positivity Project with Jeff Bryan. All this and more coming up. This is School Talks on 760 WJR.
This is School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Joining us now on the program is Principal Heidi Manguni from Will Lee Elementary in Richmond Schools. And with her is teacher Elena Hunter. Welcome to the program, ladies.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
So in our continued discussion and focus on literacy, which has gotten a lot of discussion and talk, not only in politics, but in the importance of children's lives, Principal Manguni, what is the importance of early literacy?
Well, as we know, it's kind of where it all starts. So it's important because we just really need to understand how students read and the science behind reading. It starts there. It's the foundation. So what we're trying to really do is looking at the importance of how do students read. So making research your rock when you're making any sort of decision, making sure that we're doing evidence-based practices. It's easy to just continue to do what we think works, and we really need to lean into what we know works.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm sure you're both aware of the movement Sold a Story. Are you aware of that movement?
I'm not, no.
It's a group of moms who are very critical of the Lucy Calkins movement.
Okay.
And all the work that a particular publishing company was doing. And they attempted to make the claim that all of this emphasis on whole language and not phonics has in part created a generation of non-readers. Mm-hmm. Almost in this sort of liberal conservative argument as to how you approach reading. So the whole concept of whole reading is fascinating. And if you haven't looked into it, it's a fantastic series. It's a podcast. And some school moms started a podcast called Sold a Story. So Heidi, as the principal, how do you support literacy initiatives in your school?
Well, the first thing that I feel my role is making sure that we're supporting teachers. And before we can do that, students have to be in the building. My big belief, and my teachers know, is that we can't teach students that aren't there. So we have to really have a goal of getting students intrinsically motivated to be there. Our teaching literacy begins at 7:50 in the morning, creating a safe space for students. So they really need to be able to feel comfortable being in their four walls, in their classroom, to make mistakes. So I think that's a big part of where it starts in our building.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing I'm really proud of is that we have a 90-minute ELA block that's pretty sacred. We know that we have to make time for what matters. So mm-hmm. for 90 minutes, we don't do any push and pull out anything. We just really focus on tier one instruction for literacy. So that way we can really get down to the needs of our students. So really proud of that.
Help our School Talks listeners understand the term tier one instruction.
Yeah. Tier one instruction is instruction that all students get at their grade level. So that's really not veering off yet into any small groups or getting into any differentiation to different groups. We're really looking at what students need at their grade level. So we're really looking at standards. And then we kind of tangle down from there and scaffold as the day goes on.
Mm-hmm.
We know that if tier one instruction is strong, that we don't see as many students in our tier two and our tier three. So mm-hmm. that has to be the first thing that we're looking at. And so we teach kids at their grade level.
And the tier two and three are those students who need additional support for
Absolutely.
Some reason. Okay.
Yeah.
So Elena, as a teacher, what is your biggest consideration when considering literacy initiatives, either those from the school or those that you're using on your own?
Well, I guess when I first started in teaching, I taught as a departmentalized teacher, which meant that even though I was teaching third grade, I taught reading to the entire grade. And that's kind of where I was able to dive into understanding the foundational skills that it takes for a young reader to learn these steps to read. Learning and understanding the components it took to support my young readers. I continued in with my education, and then I focused primarily on studying and the breakdown of foundational literacy skills. And regardless what curriculums or programs we're using, it always came down to the science of reading and the components it took to get students where they need to be. And that is when you're talking about your phonemic awareness and phonics and fluency and vocabulary and comprehension, and eventually these tools the kids need to lead them into bringing writing into this as well.
So all of those different components, the fluency, et cetera, mm-hmm. they all make up the wheel. Those are all the spokes on the wheel of literacy.
Absolutely.
And if you pick any one of them, are they typically in a class like yours done in isolation, or do you approach an entire class on any particular lesson about fluency, or how does that intersect with the different spokes right. in the wheel?
I'm at the second grade level, so when the kids get to the second grade level, the idea, or my biggest goal at that point, is to link the spelling, reading, and writing all together, kind of as one cohesive piece. As they're developing in reading, though, some of them are taught, not in isolation, but are focused on more and more, depending on what age, or kind of just where their reading level is at the moment. That's where small groups kind of come into play, and that becomes an essential part in the daily literacy blocks. Mm-hmm. So you teach your tier one, and then you can kind of break your students apart by specific pieces that they need within these foundational mm-hmm. skills.
So we're currently with Principal Heidi Manguni and teacher Elena Hunter from Will Lee Elementary in Richmond Schools. How do you get families involved in this sort of literacy journey?
Again, that's with building relationships with families and kind of creating that open line of conversation and having families, again, like this isn't their path that maybe they went into if they're not in education, just being able to understand what terms I mean when I send something home so they understand what I'm trying, like my goals for the children are in class. One thing that I did kind of want to mention, I went to Ron Clark Academy in Atlanta, Georgia, and this was where it was a school that focused mostly on like relationship buildings with families and with the kids there. And when you walked into the school, it was just contagious. That feeling was amazing. Mm-hmm. And everybody wanted to be there. The kids were happy. The families were like right there, ready to be involved as well. And that resonates with me. That's something that I want in my own classroom. And that's something I kind of strive to get to. And that just comes from building those relationships. And that's the neat part about being somewhere like Richmond. It's great to work in a small mm-hmm. community like that, where everybody's just there to support each other and be involved in the educational process.
Sure. One last question for Principal Heidi Manguni. How many students in your school?
We have 603.
Wow.
603 students. And just to add to that, we start at 3 years old in our building. So we're very unique in that we're in early childhood. We start at age 3. So as we're talking about fostering that, we're really at an advantage to be able to foster at age 3, mm-hmm. early literacy. We always say families have a superpower. This starts way beyond they get into the classroom. But at 3 years old, we're able to make literacy matter. And so 603 students, but we do get them at 3 years old. So we get to start early on initiatives. They're going to library with books in hands at 3 years old. We have March's Reading Month coming up. You know, I think every month should be March's Reading Month, but for this initiative, you know, we make a big deal out of it. We get parents in there, we get them excited. We're doing families with jammies, and that's going to be that every kid is going to have a parent with them. So we want parents to know reading matters to us, mm-hmm. and we want to motivate them to believe in the same.
That's fantastic. 603 students, that's a lot of French fries.
Yes.
For anyone keeping track, that's a lot of French fries. Heidi Manguni and Elena Hunter from Will Lee Elementary in Richmond. Keep up the great work. I appreciate your time for joining us on the program.
Thank you for having us.
Coming up after the break from Owosso Schools, we'll be joined by Superintendent Steve Brooks, Assistant Superintendent Kathy Dwyer, and Middle School Principal Richie Collins. Stay right there. This is 760 WJR.
This is School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy, sponsored by Wakely Associates, Plant Moran Real Point, Collins and Blaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, and by Clark Construction. Once again at the head of the class, Dr. Livernoy.
Joining us now on the program are the fine people from Owosso Public Schools. With us is Superintendent Steve Brooks, Assistant Superintendent for Curriculum and Instruction, Kathy Dwyer, and from Owosso Middle School, Principal Richie Collins. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having
us.
Yep, thank you, Dr. Liberani.
So before we get into all the great things going on in Owosso, I think it's important for our School Talks listeners to know the real homegrown story of Steve Brooks. I think we may have some things in common, but tell us a little bit about your story in Owosso.
Yeah, Dr. Liberani. Actually, I've had the pleasure of going and attending Owosso Public Schools. I started out there in 1974 as a kindergarten student. Did my whole educational career through Owosso. Went off to college, came back, started teaching, coaching, believe it or not, even taught driver's training for several summers back in the day. Then pursued administration, got into assistant principal, principal roles, central office, worked my way up. I've basically been in the district for 33 years, 50 total if you count my educational career dating back to the early 70s. But the other fun fact as far as having that homegrown story is that I was the first alumni to be awarded the superintendent position in the history of Owosso, dating back to 1867. So just a little fun fact for your listeners. The other thing with the homegrown story is with many people that go off to college and then come back, they get a chance to work with their teachers. And so that was kind of a unique experience to be in a leadership role with some of my teachers that I had as and coaches that I had when I was growing up.
Yeah, great story. And for all you listening in Owosso, when it's Mr. Brooks' time to move on from the district, it might be time to name a building after him or something. So,
not sure about that.
with all the good stuff going on in Owosso, one thing I did want to talk about is my research tells me that you guys have developed a really good, intense focus on literacy in schools. And Kathy, how are you leading the effort in Owosso to capitalize on literacy and helping students?
Well, thank you. One of the things that makes Owosso stand out is we've received some pretty large amounts of money through some grants, one specifically being the 35J grant. And with the grant money that we have received, we have spent some money on materials for teachers, specifically UFLY. We've provided some professional development for our teachers, and we are looking at updating some curriculum for them. So I know Mr. Brooks was there when we implemented the UFLY, so I'm going to have him explain a little bit about the UFLY process and what that program is, and then we can dig into the other details.
Sure, but before we do so, just for our listeners' purpose, you mentioned 35J. For those of you who are not aware, school funding from the state often has a number and a letter attached to it as a line item. You'll hear all kinds of things like 31A, 31AA, 35J, 20J, all these different things. So just for perspective, that source of money comes through a line item. But Steve, tell us a little bit about the effort.
Yeah, so UFLY, which basically stands for the University of Florida Literacy Institute, and that is basically what we all would say is a phonics program. So when we were growing up, it was a real deliberate phonics program, but it's research-based. It's dedicated to moving our literacy outcomes for students. It is very focused. It's focused on reading instruction, particularly with struggling readers and students with dyslexia. And our teachers received state-of-the-art training. We researched several different phonics programs, and we were lucky enough to bring that in under my realm when I was in central office as in Kathy's role as the assistant superintendent. So, but we brought that in. We're seeing great success even after only a full year of implementation. Our teachers have accepted this program, and our students are benefiting from that as that's the ultimate goal.
Mm-hmm. We're currently with Steve Brooks, Kathy Dwyer and Richie Collins from Owosso Schools. So extending on that line of thinking, in another area of curriculum, I understand you're doing some work in math and artificial intelligence. Tell us a bit about that and how it connects to some of the middle school efforts that you have underway.
Yeah, so in math, recently we basically overhauled our 6 through 12 math just a couple of years ago, and we updated all of the materials. We provided a state-of-the-art professional development to our math teachers, but one thing that's fairly unique to Owosso is we have a program called ALEX, and basically that's an AI-assisted intelligence, and our students take an ALEX test, which then will give them, the computer will tell them what areas that they need to focus in on. And then as they successfully master those materials, then it'll keep moving them up levels. So we've integrated our artificial intelligence to our math program, and that begins at fourth grade. And we're seeing the benefits of that as all kids are working on the mathematical concepts that they need. So it's very individualized, mm-hmm. and but it's integrating that computer assisted technology to help out with teachers in the classroom.
You know, in a previous program on School Talks, we had a presenter talk about artificial intelligence, and one of the things they talked about is exactly what you just mentioned, and that is artificial intelligence can generate an enormous amount of feedback specific to a student that otherwise would have to come from a teacher. And in having that ready, it affords the teacher the opportunity to focus more on working with the student and things as opposed to going through and trying to find the feedback. So a really structured, positive thing as far as artificial intelligence. And how does this connect to the work that Richie, you're doing at Owosso
right.
Middle School? I understand you have an intervention program and a particular structure to the school day.
Yeah.
Tell us a bit about that.
So we call our intervention kind of time, we call it Trojan time. It's first hour of the school day for all the kids. All the kids have an opportunity to kind of select different classes during this time. And during this Trojan time, that's where we'll have our interventions that kids will take, either the math intervention or English intervention. But not all kids need those interventions. So the real trick was trying to come up with other classes for kids to do. And so this is where we take our time to do student council and jazz band and the school newspaper and filmmaking and yearbook, like all those kinds of classes that kids normally would have to do, like after school. We do this kind of during the day to really give our kids more of an opportunity in the morning time. But at the same time, we're able to get those interventions in that Dr. Dwyer and Mr. Brooks have talked about.
So you essentially have taken what would be a traditional school day and sort of carved it up a little bit differently.
Yeah, we sliced an hour out of our morning every morning.
And it gives you an opportunity to work on all these different areas.
Yeah. If you ask our kids, they'll tell you that Trojan time is probably one of their favorite hours. Mm-hmm. And we make it first hour purposefully, number one, to try to get those kids to school, to start their day off right, on the right foot, you know, mm-hmm. Get those interventions in and, you know, kind of get everybody moving on through their day.
Sure. Mr. Brooks, how many students are in Owosso Schools?
We have just under 3,000 students total.
Huh? Okay.
So we're in the heart of mid-Michigan in Shiawassee County, and we're the largest school district in Shiawassee County. So we're big enough to offer a lot of opportunities for our kids, but yet small enough that we know everybody's name.
You know, one of the neatest things about this conversation is you're pulling in what I would consider are some of the most important things happening in education right now. Literacy, artificial intelligence, having the courage to retool the school day. Sounds like a lot of wonderful things going on in Owosso Schools. And I'd like to thank Steve Brooks, Kathy Dwyer, and Richie Collins for joining us on the program. I appreciate your time today.
Yeah,
thank you so much.
Dr. Livernoy.
Coming up after the break, we'll be joined by Kara Kucharik, teacher consultant from Troy Schools. Stay right there. This is 760 WJR.
School Talks on WJR with Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Joining us now on the program is Kara Kucharik, a teacher consultant from Troy Schools in Oakland County. Welcome to the program, Kara.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
So, Kara, in your role as a teacher consultant in special education in Troy schools, tell us a little bit about your current role and what role you play in helping students with disabilities.
Of course. I have been fortunate to work in the Troy School District for the past 13 years. I'm a special education teacher, and my role as a teacher consultant is support students on an IEP based on different academic needs or behavioral needs. The teacher consultant role is a service, so I see students a couple times a week, and the rest of their time they're in the general education classroom.
So in that role, as we say in the business, a TC, are you providing direct support to teachers or just the students?
Both.
Both? Okay.
Yeah, I'm really fortunate. I do pull out students for direct academic intervention, but I also push into the classroom to support all students in addition to students with special education needs, and coaching the teacher and how she can differentiate her content and help meet the needs of all learners in the room.
Mm-hmm. And for our School Talks listeners, special education students at times are both in what we call a regular education environment, mm-hmm. or sometimes in a different environment with a special education teacher, and in the role that Kara plays is sort of a little bit of both depending on the situation. So, you know, one thing about special education is, given the broad range of skill and developmental levels among special education students, tell us a bit about how they structure this, what we call the continuum of special education supports, and how that sort of connects to the students you're serving.
Yeah, we are really fortunate in Troy to have a wide variety of supports and services available for students who qualify for special education. Throughout the evaluation process, we determine what are the areas of deficit and what are their needs. And that continuum range of services could be a teacher consultant service like myself. Students could qualify for resource room support, where they're seen daily and pulled out for more specific targeted intervention. And there's also a wide range of categorical classrooms. Students that maybe aren't successful with their full day in gen ed, they have a home base or somewhere else to go. But we really tailor each of those to the individual child. Mm-hmm. Our goal is children are in general education their full day. And based on the evaluation and what the child's needs are, we write that IEP to meet their needs with the goal of them being eventually in gen ed full time.
Mm-hmm. And you bring up a really important point about special education, and that is, depending on the age at which the student enters a special education program, the goal is always, where applicable, some form of independence.
Yeah.
And it brings up a term called least restrictive environment.
Mm-hmm.
And how does that term, least restrictive environment, play into this conversation?
Yeah, when we're sitting and writing an IEP, least restrictive environment is the forefront of our minds. We want to really be specific to that child in a very strengths-based approach. What can this child do? And as we're determining what are the areas of need, what accommodations are needed for that? And our first thought is, can they do it in gen ed?
Mm-hmm.
If they had heavy accommodations, if it's possibly an adult sitting with them. And then, okay, if they're not in gen ed, what does that specialized instruction look like that's pulled out that's going to help them connect that back to their general education classroom? So then that all-time long-term goal is to get them back in the classroom full-time.
And, you know, a really important distinction here is special education students who move sort of in and out of that continuum depending on their skill level or any emotional challenges they may face, they too bring to the classroom a similar set of issues that regular education students
mm-hmm.
do, and many of those kinds of students have difficulties, and it really makes you appreciate the compounding effect it has for students as well as the teachers who serve them.
Yeah.
And in that lens, sort of in your role as TC on a daily basis, how do you modify all of these processes and content and things that go into working with the students? How do you manage it on a daily basis?
You know, it's a really blended, beautiful mix of a lot of things. Our goal is, you know, grade level standards. So looking at what that grade level content expectation is. It's also looking at what the student's strengths are. What can I build on from there? Whether it's, you know, they're studying nonfiction in the classroom, the student's reading a grade or two below grade level. What are some nonfiction books that I can pull that they could still be in gen ed reading, you know, similar expectations of their peers, but at their instructional level. Another great example is math. You know, we are able to tailor math at their needs when they're pulled out and I'm working on intervention to get them to that grade level standard. But when they go back in the classroom for math, having a shorter amount of problems or focusing on whatever the skill set they are, what can I give them that they can go back to class and do that work with their peers?
Just probably the best example of the term differentiated instruction when you're expected to cover some aspect of curriculum with a group of students who come to you with incredibly diverse skills.
Yeah.
We're currently with Kara Kucharik from Troy Schools talking about special education services and her role as a teacher consultant. So, Kara, from a diversity and inclusion perspective, as these students move in and out of classrooms, what types of strategies or activities do you use or work with teachers on to promote that inclusion? As we know, it's difficult enough to be in that situation, but from an inclusion perspective, what kinds of strategies do you help students with to feel included?
Yeah, we've done a lot of work in Troy on the sense of belonging. We want all students to feel like they're at home in classrooms and creating an inclusive classroom environment where all students feel welcome and that they have a part in that space. I'm a big fan of also building relationships with students, getting to know them, letting them get to know me in my personal life. Not only does that give us common ground that we can talk about, it makes them feel comfortable because they know a little bit about me. And then I also build on those high interests when we're thinking about content. If we're reading nonfiction and you are very interested in trains, I'm going to tie that into your learning so you can learn about things you know. But really having an open-minded mindset that all students can be successful is also helpful. And as I'm coaching and working with classroom teachers, how can I help them have that sense of belonging in their general education classroom along with when we're working in my classroom together?
You really struck my interest with trains. As my grandfather many moons ago had a what was almost a two-car garage. It was all trains, right?
Oh, my son would love that.
And every kid in the neighborhood, that was the place to hang out. And I think about how that becomes an important conduit for someone who may otherwise not be interested in school to really meet them where they are. So as we know, it's sort of a buzzword in education. Parents are really important in this process. And in your experience, how important is the success of your students connected to cooperation and collaboration with parents?
It's everything. I'm a big fan, just like building relationships with my students. I like to build relationships with the parents that I work with. I want to help them have a clear understanding of what my role is, how I'm helping their child, and giving them some tips and tricks of things they can do at home. I have a lot of one-sheet visuals that I like to hand parents. If you're reading with your child, these are some things you could do. I also think it's really important that they know if we're on the same page, that will help their child make more accelerated progress faster, and that we're all working together for the best interest of their child.
Yeah, Troy Schools is lucky to have you. Kara Kucharik, thank you for your insight in special education and, more importantly, the good work that you do for the students in Troy Schools. And thanks for joining us on the program.
Thank you so much.
Coming up after the break, we'll hear from Jeff Bryan, the CEO of the Positivity Project. Stay right there. You will not want to miss this discussion about how we help children be positive in this world. We'll be back right after this.
School Talks on WJR is sponsored by Wakely Associates, Point Moran Real Point, Collins and Blaha, O'Reilly Rancilio PC Attorneys at Law, and by Clark Construction. Now let's get back to class. Once again, your host, former Superintendent Dr. Robert Livernoy.
Joining us now on the program is Jeff Bryan, the CEO and co-founder of the Positivity Project, joining us from Savannah, Georgia. Welcome to the program, Jeff.
Thank you very much, Robert. Great to be here.
So, you know, schools seemingly forever have thought of different ways and experimented with different things to help with student behavior and discipline. And in your efforts through the Positivity Project, tell us a little bit about how you work with schools and educators to achieve your mission.
Yeah, so our mission is to empower students to build positive relationships and become their best selves. And the way that we do that is we partner with pre-K to 12 schools across the country, and we equip educators with the resources, the strategy, and the training to teach positive psychology's 24 character strengths. And we believe that through a proactive upstream approach to character education or social emotional learning, whichever, you know, that school is looking for, that you're able to build better relationships and a more positive school culture.
So you mentioned 24 character strengths. Give me an example of a few of them to sort of frame the ways that you can work with students.
Yeah, so some examples are bravery, perseverance, self-control. And, you know, even though our name is the Positivity Project, we like to remind people that optimism is one of the 24 character strengths. And these 24 character strengths were classified by a team of researchers back in the late 90s and early 2000s. It was led by Dr. Chris Peterson at the University of Michigan. And they found that these 24 character strengths cut across cultures and have existed throughout history. Mm-hmm. So this becomes a common vocabulary in schools. So if you're a teacher, you're teaching that perseverance character strength for a week, and it's different for every grade level from pre-K all the way through 12. Daily 15-minute lessons. You start out the week, the first 2 days typically understanding what that character strength is. Days 3 and 4 are engaging with that character strength through some type of activity where you're getting up out of your seats. And day 5 would be reflecting on what you've learned during that week. And so you look at perseverance, you can apply that to all different types of challenges. You can apply it to challenges in the classroom. You can apply it to challenges outside of school. You can apply it to, you know, the football field, basketball court, whatever. But you're learning that you can overcome challenges in your life.
You mentioned 15-minute lessons. Is the project driven by a particular curriculum across these 24 strengths?
It is. It is. We have an annual calendar laid out for the schools. Right now, it's a 39-week calendar. So we've got the 24 character strengths on there. Each one has its own week. Gratitude gets 2 weeks because that's right around Thanksgiving. So it's about a week and a half leading up into Thanksgiving. And then we've also got 5 elements of what we call the other people mindset. Now, these are all based upon how to build positive relationships in your life. And it's grounded in a statement by Dr. Chris Peterson, who said that he could sum up positive psychology in just 3 words: other people matter, period. So these are ways to build positive relationships in your life. We've also got spiral reviews throughout the course of the year, and we try to align these character strengths with certain times of the year where you're naturally going to be talking about them. So typically, gratitude around Thanksgiving, self-control leading into the holiday season, and then kicking off the new year with optimism when people are making their New Year's resolutions, prudence, because you have to make a plan to hit that goal, and then perseverance, because, you know, your plan's going to go sideways at times, and you've got to overcome those challenges on the way to those resolutions. Love around Valentine's Day, things like that. So these daily 15-minute lessons, they are really the foundation of our curriculum. And through the consistency of learning about these character strengths, what it does is it builds a vocabulary in students. Students are more self-aware of who they are. They're able to see themselves through the character strengths. They're also more empathetic to other people, and they're looking at them through their character. That's the formula for more positive relationships, in our opinion.
I'll tell you what intrigues me. Jeff Bryan, CEO and co-founder of the Positivity Project, is the way you have articulated this framework really provides an opportunity to take any one of these strengths and incorporate it not only into an isolated daily lesson, but really anything else that you're studying in the curriculum. When I think about different pieces of literature we may have children read, or events in history or social studies, all of them cultivate these kinds of character strengths, and it seems like a natural connection to what would be an existing school curriculum. Is that a fair assessment?
That's a very fair assessment. We've heard many teachers tell us that it strengthened ELA considerably in their students, that when they're writing or when they're reading, they're using this character strengths vocabulary. They're identifying those strengths in characters and books, and that's exactly what we want to happen. And we also want them to apply those strengths in the real world outside of school as well.
Yeah, and you know, given all that's already on teachers' collective plates, how does your project make it easy for teachers to incorporate and navigate this curriculum?
Yeah, that's a great question. There is a lot on teachers' plates, and it seems like more and more keeps getting put on. So our lessons are designed to be very minimal prep, often zero prep. We hear from a lot of teachers and principals that they don't even look at the resources ahead of time because they know how strong they're going to be. They know they're going to be safe. They know they're going to be engaging for their students. And so they're shared via Google Slides. So it goes day one, day two, all the way through day five. We've also got additional resources and all that if anyone wants to look ahead of time and swap something out. But they're daily 15-minute lessons that are incredibly easy. Open up the slide, play the video, ask the questions, and that's your lesson.
Mm-hmm. You know, the universality of these strengths really provides an opportunity. When I think about every day in our world, there is something going on, whether it's intolerance, justice, bravery. Not only can you attach these to a structured school curriculum, but you could also use the daily events that are plentiful no matter where you look, internet, TV, radio, wherever, to create these connections. So let me ask you, how has this program been received by students and parents?
It's been received very well by students and parents. We have P2 for Families. It's a publicly available resource on our website, and it's differentiated pre-K to 2, 3 to 5, 6 to 8, 9 to 12. And so there's essentially a P2 daily lesson for families to use once a week. And so there's a link directly to that. And what we've heard is parents talking about their kids using this vocabulary at home, and how it provides a broader vocabulary for everyone in the household to use, but also for parents to talk about things with their kids, mm-hmm. To point out when they're using open-mindedness, when they're using humility. You know, humor is a character strength too. So kids like to make jokes, and it's good, and you can point that out. That's good. Like, that's funny, or sometimes, that's funny, but that crossed the line. You know, there's different ways to be able to talk about these things with your kids. And so that's what we've heard from parents who are using P2 for Families and seeing what their kids are coming home and talking about. Mm-hmm.
Jeff Bryan, CEO and co-founder of the Positivity Project, I appreciate your time today. You've really taken what is traditionally an approach in schools with student discipline and students getting along and really created a very neat, structured, and relevant opportunity for them. So I want to thank you for joining us on the program and keep up the good work.
Thank you very much, Robert. I appreciate it.
I'd like to thank all of our guests for a great program today. Heidi Manguni and Elena Hunter from Richmond Schools. From Owosso Schools, Catherine Dwyer, Steve Brooks, and Richie Collins. From Troy Schools, Kara Kucharik. And from the Positivity Project, Jeff Bryan. That's all the time we have for now. But remember, there are two ways to spell one and three ways to spell two. Till next time, this has been School Talks on 760 WJR.